You're a knife maker. You almost a bit of an artisanal knife maker where you love taking it to the next level with gemstones, your handles, chequering, something that you don't see very often here in South Africa. Why did you go the route that you have gone with your knives as opposed to focusing on silly little bolt-on knives or
run-of-the-mill knives?
Yeah.
Morgan, I studied art way back in the day, art and graphic design. Then I actually went and did a couple of jobs for graphic design, but I ended up doing sign writing, so it wasn't for me. Then I went back and I started jewelry design and manufacturing course. Did a couple of semesters in that, and then I got a opportunity to go and work for Ethos, and I became a goldsmith there, and I've been working, or I was working there for the since 2010 till 2023. So I've been a goldsmith. I love gemstones. I love precious metals. So it's in my blood. So I think the artistic part comes from the art background. I love doing ceramic work. I love doing drawing, stuff like that. So for me, knives is not just a functional tool. It's also a piece of art. I mean, it can definitely be both. It's like a vehicle. You get your normal ones that's practical and you use every day. And then you get your Ferraris and Lamborghinis that is not only able to drive, but they look really good. And that's actually where I want to go. I want to make something that's not just practical, but pleasing to the eye as well, and in artistic sense. So I think that was my inspiration, my route that I want to take.
And knife making is actually really such a dynamic art form. I also like calling it art form because I very much went down the similar route. I also studied graphic design, also definitely not for me. But there's so many aspects to knife making, which is absolutely so phenomenal. With the minute you get bored with one little part of knife making, you can maybe have a look at something different.
It's multifaceted.
And then when you get to the finished product, you can start looking at the leather work, and then you can even go different routes there. Is that the diversity of knife making?
I think
something that's really gripped you.
That is the why knife making, I think, is the ideal form. From planning your steel, making Damascus so that your pattern can follow the profile of the blade, from profiling the blade, from the type of grind you want to put in, every little step has its own creative aspects that you can chop and change and be creative with. Handle shaping, material of that, I mean, it's a vast selection of materials you can use. Ivory, synthetic, carbon fiber, woods. I mean, I love woods. Every little thing is customizable. So I don't think there's really another art form that gives you that much freedom, as in knife making. In ceramics, you're fixed to clay, and yeah, you can color it maybe and you can glaze it, but you've got about three options. Same with oil painting and drawing as well. You're limited. It's still going to be a flat piece of canvas or a piece of paper. This is three-dimensional, multifaceted, so many options for materials, and it's ever-evolving. Every now and then there's someone that gets this brilliant idea for a mechanism or a blade shape, and people say that everything has been done already, and it's probably true. I mean, all the profiles have been done throughout the ages. It's being one of the oldest tools in creation. But still, people come up with new and inspiring ideas. I mean, and we as South Africa has some, to me, the best knife makers in the world. I mean, I'm a big fan of Brennan Wilkinson and Kevin Harvey and Mrs. Heather Harvey, Nils van der Berg. I mean, they're all mastersmiths, of which I think two of them is a beard, the Bloom Show. So now we've got a lot of inspirational people with fantastic talents, and yeah, I think this is probably the most multifaceted, free to play type of thing you can do is knife making.
And knife making, if you come to the production of it, also is so dynamic in a sense that there are certainly some tools that you need to have, which are non-negotiable, but that's the basics of everything. But if you find something that's not working for you, you can always customize it for yourself or make it for yourself, which is also such a nice little part of the process and the journey, isn't it?
Yes, no, most definitely. I mean, Like you've said before, need a tool, make a tool. Especially with your production work, I mean, you're sitting with technology now that can assist you in so many ways. I mean, you can have stuff laser cut out to precision. You can have it surface ground. You can skip a lot of steps that weren't possible to have in the earlier days of modern art making. So I think technologically wise, it's definitely come a long way to assist the knife maker. And if you're doing high-end production, I mean, I've seen guys that literally mold in the grinds, the edge geometry. I mean, it's fantastic. You can angle the blade to a certain degree, and you can do a mold and get a perfect run out. It's a good option. Not financially viable for me, but it's a good option.
Interesting. And also, the making of the knife itself, there are certain things that are also rudimentals, and yet rudimentally, you have to get that right. For example, your heat treat. You've got to understand the process or that kind of stuff. But also, there are correct ways of doing things, and there are incorrect ways, but there's a lot of gray area in between where you can work according to what works for you.
Yes. Definitely, there is certain rules. Each steel has its own properties. The quenching material you need for the heat treatment, the temperatures, the tempering times, all of those are crucial. If you're going to skip a step or mess it up, unfortunately, there's no going back from that. Follow the rules. They've got, I think Stefan Dijek has got online charts for what steels need to be retreated on what temperatures, to temper for how long, at what temperatures. The quench wells, you have to use fast quench or medium quench well if you're using stainless steel, carbon steels. There is certain rules. Even with edge geometry, if you want to have something that's going to have a good edge retention and is strong at the same time, follow the edge geometry rules. Niels from above gave out nice little grind height guide so that you know what type of hollow ground wheel size you have to use for the width of your blade and the thickness of your steel. So there is guidelines and there is rules, but for the rest, it's a free-to-play artful.
And this last one's going to be expressed in 2 weeks' time with the Blim Knife Show coming up. To my understanding, it's the oldest knife show in South Africa. Or someone has mentioned that to me in the past. But whether that's true or not, you know, everyone has their own stories. Knife making is like fishing. There's always a fisherman's tale somewhere.
Yes.
But it's certainly one of the most unique shows in terms of, they always say when you leave Blim, you cry twice a knife. When you come to Blim, you cry and when you leave. And it's the same with the knife show. When you leave that knife show, you feel like you've been to Blim. And that's what really makes this knife so special, isn't it?
I think what Bloemfontein Knife Show has for it, I mean, there's a lot of big knife shows. Unfortunately, as far as I've heard, and I'm speaking under correction, the Brooklyn Knife Show has been cancelled. It's not going to happen again. That's very unfortunate. I attended it last year. It was fantastic. There's the Cape Town Knife Show, the Baobab Knife Show. There's so many different knife shows everywhere. But Bloemfontein's got one thing for it. It's central. So we've got people from all over South Africa because it's a centrally located knife show. So we've got that diversity of knife makers. And like I said, we've got a lot of local talent as well. But I think that's the thing that makes it fun. You can have guys from Johannesburg meet up with guys from Cape Town that usually be an extremely long trip to take. In a central point. So I think this is more like a gathering place for knife makers as to maybe one of the oldest or best knife shows there is. But I think we're standing on about 40 years of knife shows. I'm not sure. Like I said, I'm speaking under correction. But it's an old show.
A beautiful theme knife show, and I think this is what a lot of people out there don't understand. This is not just to go and have a look at knives. Of course, that is essentially what a show is. But for me, I know I need to order some things urgently to get a couple of jobs done, but I'm busy procrastinating because I know in 2 weeks I can get whatever I want
at
the show at good prices, from belts, G10, handle material, woods,
steel,
chatting to people, gaining some valuable advice from people, and actually seeing some of the masters like John Wilker doing another demonstration.
Yes.
And it's a fantastic starting point for any youngster or old person wanting to delve into this little dark art form called knife making.
Well, dark art form it is. Like I said, it's a love-hate relationship, and it literally qualifies a double-edged sword. It's fun, but it can be frustrating as hell. Well, I think saving your time to go to the knife show to procure some materials is the better choice. They usually have great sales. They're introducing new products. They're explaining it. Things that you won't usually find on the website or when just speaking to people. So I think that human interaction is important. It helps a lot, especially with suppliers. I mean, I love some of the suppliers in South Africa are so friendly. The service is so great. Love working with the guys.
And you've mentioned that you haven't been part of the Boom Knife Club this year, but it is one of those things. People join golf clubs, leave golf clubs.
This year's been a bit hectic, so I couldn't be part
of it. But we are still going to see you at the show nonetheless. What have you got on display for us this year?
Okay, so lately I've been moving a bit away from the art knives due to the market. I've got a couple of orders that I had to do this year for stainless steel knives, hunters with walnut and checkering. I made a couple because I wanted to practice the checkering. I love checkering on walnut. I'm a firearm fanatic, so obviously the gunstock and gunstock checkering ticked my box. So I tried a couple, and it got really good reviews. And I was actually so busy until last month just getting stuff out that there wasn't time for knife making or joining the club or art knife making and joining the club. But luckily, I'm in a position now where I can play a bit again and do some of the stuff I really enjoy to do. But what I've got is some old stock, and then I've got a couple of new stainless steel walnut oaks that I'm actually quite happy with at this moment.
I definitely think tick dices or the checkering that you have been playing with, it's something that's always tickled my fancy as well. Not that I'm a very big gun person, but I do follow a couple of the pages just to see how these masters check in. It's unbelievable. Where does a person start a checkering? Because it's also something we don't see that often in knives here in South Africa.
True. The approach that I take is extremely different from the gunstock checkering. I've got the gunstock checkering bits and tools or the checkering files. But to me and for the spaces I'm working in, it's just too big. So what I did is I built my own little checkering files and setups. So it's literally just a microfile that I've ground in some parallel grooves and teeth. And then I've got a triangular-shaped diamond velorba diamond file. So I literally just make parallel lines at 60 degrees when you've done doing your border. And then I take the little diamond file, the triangular file, and I file in the facets. So each one of those lines is literally hand filed to a certain degree. That's how I do my checkering. That's the only way I can get into tight spaces. I know it's not the correct way, but for me it works.
But this comes back to an earlier point we made of you make something worth yourself and not.
That's exactly it. I mean, need a tool, make a tool. These are the checkering bits. You get them in different teeth rows. But as you can see, that's actually quite large.
Yeah.
So if you're going for something that is really small, you're not going to be able to do a stroke with that size tool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I needed something smaller, a bit more tight. Gunstocks, the great part about gunstocks is it's large.
Yeah.
So you've got long strokes, large surfaces to work on. But rudimentary little tools, but they work for me.
And is this something going forward that you maybe want to make a bit more of your signature handles to be incorporate checking, but no. Or is that just special orders, really?
To be honest, I never thought that I would see a walnut handle checkered hunting knife in South Africa. So I made my, when I made my first one as a Niels Pretorius Model H challenge knife, that was a quite fun little challenge competition type thing. It got a lot of attention and I thought, well, why not? I mean, I love it. There must be other people out there that's also quite fond of firearms and checkering and walnut, the combination. It's a classic theme. I mean, steel and checkered walnut it's classic. I like the classics. So I did a few and it just went. So I've been doing it for a while now, for the past year or so. It pays the bills.
Absolutely.
So it works.
Now, your advice to anybody that wants to take up knife making, if I had to do that, my number one would be watch Forged and Fire, enjoy it. But don't believe what you see on TV.
No, they skip a lot of steps. Unfortunately, they have to shorten the show to fit in everything. But there's a lot of fundamental and crucial steps that they're not showing. They're showing the quenching of the blade, which is good. But they're not showing the tempering of the blade.
Absolutely.
That is a very, very important part. If you don't temper it correctly after the quench, you will sit with a brittle blade or with a soft blade. So, again, very crucial parts that they're not sharing in the show. But it's a good way to get inspiration. I would also not recommend using unknown steels. I know there is what they call the scrapyard guide to knife steel. I've seen it on the internet and stuff like that. But unless you get that analyzed, you will not know what type of steel it is. The amount of chromium, molybdenum, vanadium, that all plays a role in what type of alloy that steel is. If you're going to heat treat that not according to the right methods, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
You're going to waste your materials, you're going to waste your time, you're going to waste a lot of hours on something that might not work.
Yeah, because you can do a spark test, which is sometimes a really good test.
Yes.
But you might not pick up a hairline crack in that piece of steel that you've just spent hours and hours. So
the problem
it's dangerous.
Now that people say, okay, but why don't you just use a file? The old files, the old
Nicholson
files, yes, they were good steels. I mean, through and through hardened good steels. The problem is the new files today, those teeth are, let's say, 66 Rockwell, which is great for filing. But it's only the edges. It's edge hardened. It's not through steel. So you can sit with an alloy as your inner core of the steel, and just the case is hardened. You're not going to be able to make a knife to that. I don't know. Use the correct steels. If you want to play around, yes, go for something like a saw blade or a leaf spring. But still, even then, you're not guaranteed that you're going to have something that's really workable.
Yeah. And the files, look, I've gone through files. I still use files. But the reality is we're simply not finding these old files anymore because they've all been turned into knives somewhere along the line.
Yes.
And what we get at the hardware stores just ain't good enough.
Any new file, but it's the same problem with the leaf springs as well. There is a big difference between the 5160 in the old, let's say, pre-60s models cars and the new vehicles of today. It's also a type of alloy that's not a true 5160, so we don't really know if it will make a fantastic knife like 5160 does. But it's the same thing with the tools as well. I mean, you don't know. You don't know how to heat treat it. You don't know if it's got a fairly high amount of silicone or something in it. You don't know what the steel's composites are. So I would still recommend going for known steels. Goldsmith and Jewelry Supplies, they literally laser engrave the steel's characteristics on the steel itself. It's fantastic. Heat treatment guide, stuff like that. It's just, you can't get any better than that.
Yeah, but it is also worthwhile just to support our local guys that bring the stuff in. Z will always bend over backwards to give you good advice.
Quick
as quick well, business. Quality products, and always a wide variety of anything.
Yes, a large selection. And they try to keep up with the times. I mean, if there's a new steel popping out somewhere, it's not a week or two, then some of our suppliers have gotten their hands on it. And that's fantastic. That means we can keep up with the international game as well. powdered steels. I mean, I didn't even know about powdered steels. And when I actually found out about Canister Damascus and stuff like that, they already had everything. They had nickel powder there, 1080 powder, 01 powder. It's fantastic. I mean, then you can start painting with steel, which makes it a different ballgame in its own. So, no, I love our supplies and the variety they carry.
William, thanks so much for your time. This is most insightful, and I hope this goes a long way in pricking a bit of interest amongst people. I like I said earlier, I do it and then get distracted with other stuff, and it's one of those things we must just carry on doing. If you've done this one, just go into the garage for half an hour, burn off some steam.
It's a great way to relax. It's a great way to express your artistic freedom and just explore new possibilities. And you can actually, you can make something that's really worthwhile that will last generations, that you can hand down to your children or grandchildren. I mean, I've still got knives from my granddad and great-granddad. I mean, it's a tradition in South Africa. I mean,
absolutely.
That and a 2 cent or a coin, it's tradition. If you go shoot your first buck, you get a knife.